It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 285. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. I'm going to try and talk in a happy, cheery voice for everyone listening to the podcast here, probably on a Monday morning after just digesting that 76ers loss in Game 7 up in Toronto. We don't plan on talking about it on the podcast other than just to say that we're aware of it. And we realize you probably don't want to hear a whole lot more about it, but we might mention it a couple of times during the podcast just because it is a large festering wound. And joining me to talk about the wound, and hopefully we'll get into some Philly stuff here rather quickly in the podcast, and I think we will, is Justin Clue, the head guy from The Good Fight. You can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. And of course, Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. You can follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Justin, Liz, how you guys feeling now after absorbing all of that?
Philadelphia and Toronto, just not somewhere you want to play professional sports as a Philadelphia athlete, I would say. The ghosts of every ghost that haunts Philadelphia was in that arena tonight. Clearly it had something to do with the play at the end. And I do want to celebrate the fact that right before we started recording, we debated whether we should reference this game at all. And I am now addressing it directly, which is exactly what I was trying to avoid. And this is a disaster.
I didn't help. I kind of led into it. Yeah, it's a disaster already. Liz, episode 285 is off the rails already.
It was. There was a lot of yelling in our house. We yelled a lot. It was unhappy, and I did not like it. Unsubscribe. God, terrible.
Yeah. Well, of course, you can make sure to check out the Liberty Ballers podcast, one of the great podcasts as part of our SB Nation Philadelphia sports podcasting crew, and they'll break that all down for you. Make sure you check those guys out and subscribe to the Liberty Ballers podcast. But chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, you already subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed. So if you do, and you haven't left a 5-star rating or a review yet, please go ahead and do so. And just a reminder before we get into the show here to check out our Patreon, where we've got a lot of bonus content up there as well. It's at hittinseason.com. Patreon.com/hittinseason. I know the URL. I'm going to say it again. Patreon.com/hittinseason. So yeah, we're going to leave the Sixers loss behind us, and let's talk about a very encouraging series in Kansas City and a very encouraging road trip overall through St. Louis and Kansas City. It was a good week and weekend in Missouri, as the Phillies went 4-2 in the six games against the Cardinals and the Kansas City Royals. They enter the week now 7 games over 500, 23-16 on the season. They have a 3-game lead in the National League East on the Atlanta Braves, a 4-game lead on the Mets, and now 7.5-game lead on the Nationals. I know, Justin and Liz, you guys talked about the Nationals on your latest episode of Continued Success that you recorded at the end of last week, but I was watching the Nationals game with my father-in-law and my son over at his house this afternoon, watching Hyunjin Ryu almost no-hit the Nationals, and I'm having to hold it back, man. I'm having to stifle back some giggles and some snickering, and you know, watching Steven Strasburg get thrown out at first base on a base hit to right field by Cody Bellinger to keep the no-hitter alive in the seventh inning. That basically has summed up the Nationals season thus far, and they are now 7.5 games back in the National League East. But guys, the Phillies win another series after losing the first game of the series. They've done that a lot lately. I think it's 5 out of the last 6 series they've lost the first game of the series, but they end up winning most of these things, taking the last 2. It's a little bit of an annoying trend, starting off on a bad foot, but overall, 4-2 road trip, winning the series in Kansas City. How are you feeling now that the Phillies are coming back home?
You know what this series really reminds me of is the 2019 NBA playoffs between the Sixers and the Toronto Raptors. In that, sadly, there is an apt comparison to be made in that this team either doesn't show up or shows up altogether too much. And that trend of winning the or losing the first game of the series and then winning the last two, it's a good way to describe that. This is like a team that can lose 7-0 and then win 12-0 the next two nights in a row. But I don't want to let you jump right off. I don't want you to introduce the topic of giggling at the Nationals and then try to zip on to something more productive when you know what kind of podcast
we're on over. I know, I'm just like, why are you moving on so quick? Can we stop and talk about this for a minute?
We can linger. We can linger.
I would like to add that we were told earlier in the offseason that Bryce Harper was a terrible teammate who thought only of himself. He would get ejected when the team needed him most. He wouldn't hustle when he didn't feel it was necessary. And, you know, already in 2019, we've seen Anthony Rendon get ejected for arguing balls and strikes when his team needed him most. We've seen Steven Strasburg get thrown out on a base hit to the outfield because he wasn't running hard enough. I mean, honestly, I don't know what's going on over there. It's like they got a bunch of Bryce Harpers filling out the Nationals uniforms with all the lack of hustle and the thinking only of themselves. I mean, wow, it's a real shame what's happening over there.
Leave those 5-star review, folks.
Go ahead, Liz.
Yeah. I was just to say, like, I on continued success earlier this week, I said I wouldn't count the Nationals out yet. And I stand by that, if only because I would love to see them continue to fail. The only thing that's going to convince me that they are out of it is their continued failure and free falling into complete irrelevance. So,
Liz, some commenters have suggested we change the name of Continued Success to Continued Failure. And if we make it a podcast about the Nationals, I think we could do that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, eventually it would get kind of repetitive. And, you know, they're not very old as a franchise, but I feel like we could find enough for a good number of episodes without trying very hard.
Oh, yeah. No, and there's a lot of talk here about firing Dave Martinez, of course, and he's not a good manager, but he's also not the main problem. They just don't have many good players on that team.
Who are they going to hire if they fire him? Is someone interim better? Probably not. Who are they going to hire midseason? Like, Joe Girardi's not going to take a pay cut, guys. Like, what?
They could hire the pitching coach. No, wait, they fired that guy. So, goodness, we're running out of guys here. No, you're right, Liz. Is Buck Showalter still available? You know what I mean? It's a situation in Washington, and man, it doesn't look like it's going to get any better anytime soon. as for the Phillies, it's kind of an interesting week because they did lose 5-0 the first game in St. Louis, and then won by a combined score of 16-1, and then they lost the first game against the Royals on Friday night 5-1, and then won the next two games 13-1. So. You know, they lose the first game of these series by a combined score of 11-1, and then they win the next two games, of each series by a combined score of 29-2. So, like you said, this is a team that either doesn't show up, or they, you know, kick the door down and throw a house party and leave your house completely wrecked with the couch on fire. And that was led in small part, but no small part, on Sunday by Cole Irvin, who made a start for the recently IL'd Vince Velasquez, who has a forearm strain, going to be out for a little while. We don't know exactly how long, but Cole Irvin was pretty incredible in his major league debut. Went 7 innings, 1-run ball. The Phillies won the finale here. What did that? Geez, I totally forgot what the final score was. 6-1 today? 6-1. That's right. Yes, sir. And Irvin now 20. He's 25 years old. Was a fifth round pick by the team in 2016. Threw a first pitch strike, and this is such a key stat, Justin. Threw a first pitch strike to 22 of the 27 batters he faced. And I know that he's going up against the Kansas City Royals here, but this was an impressive outing by Cole Irvin in his big league debut. He didn't seem fazed by it at all. He looked like he was just having a great time out there, and it was kind of good to see a pitcher who doesn't have a 97 mile an hour fastball make hitters look pretty stupid.
Yeah, it's a shame that Vince Velasquez is the guy who's now considered to possibly have his rotation spot in jeopardy. It's a shame for him. Because his biggest problem is throwing about the amount of pitches Cole Irvin threw today by like the sixth inning in the first two innings. And by comparison, yeah. Cole Irvin looks like a completely efficient version of the pitcher Vince Velasquez has never managed to be, unfortunately. I know we're all rooting for Velasquez, and he had shown again some flashes of promise this year, but lately he's become the next kind of like, is this another Pivetta who's gonna go get bumped somewhere and make room for someone who can do the job a little more effectively? Cole Irvin has made one major league start, so if you're trying to make that argument, it's because you're somebody with a deadline who has to tell that story. But it is just one start. However, he was so efficient. I think he threw 94 pitches total and 76 pitches through six innings. He was so efficient and so effective, and like you said, a lot of that had to do with the first pitch strikes, but he was making his slider do a lot of the work. I think he struck two guys out on six pitches throwing only sliders at one point. He looks great, It just, even if it is just in a vacuum, he looked great. And the Phillies are a team that have been reminded early on this season that they don't have a lot of depth. And being able to go to your minors and call up a guy who's going to give you seven strong innings is not something this team can necessarily do. But today they managed to do it. Cole Irvin managed to do it, and he looked really good doing it. And the offense backed him up with six runs. So this is about as good as a debut I think you could have. And you're right, he looked completely not flustered out there. What did he say after the game? It's like the objective is to be as boring as possible or something like that. Yeah. So clearly he came up here with a plan and executed it and got the Phillies another series win.
Yeah, Liz, the last five Phillies to have a major league debut where they pitched seven innings or more with one earned run or less allowed. Cole Irvin did it on Sunday. Ben Lively did it in June of 2017. Gavin Floyd did it before that in September of 2004. Brett Myers in July of 2002. And then tell me if you guys have ever heard of this gentleman before. Anthony Shoemaker in July of 1999. Apparently a human being named Anthony Shoemaker, Liz, made a start for the Phillies in his major league debut in July of 1999, in which he went seven innings or more and gave up at least one earned run or less. I couldn't have come up with it with that name if you'd given me $1 million. And, I guess what we're talking about here is this is pretty rare company for Cole Irvin to do what he did. But, I know Matt Winkelmann has basically said that he's basically a number four, number five starter in the big leagues if he ends up sticking in a rotation. I saw the Iron Pigs radio guy basically say that was vintage Cole Irvin today. That's what he's been doing in AAA since the beginning of last year, where he's a 2.50 ERA and has gone 16-4 since the start of last season in AAA. So what were your thoughts of Cole Irvin's major league debut?
I liked what I saw. He was fun. I liked his style. I read a lot about him, when he, the announcement was made that he was going to be called up, and I liked how he talked about how he pitched. He knows exactly the type of pitcher he is, and he wants to be the best version of that pitcher. And I think he accomplished that. And he's going to have enough time, I think, to prove himself. If, Velasquez is going to be on the injured list for a while, hopefully he sticks around.
Yeah.
I don't know what their plan is. Maybe they plan to send him back down and, have Nick Pivetta come up and make some starts. I have no idea what they're going to do. But hopefully this is an opportunity for him to, prove that he can stick around to be a guy who can, eat six or seven innings and not give up the game, which is what you need from a back-end starter.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, Justin, I think you mentioned a second ago talking about the Phillies came into the season and it didn't seem like they had a lot of starting pitching depth. And right now with Jared Eichhoff coming up and doing what he has been doing, and I love what we've seen from Jared Eichhoff. I'm not sold that it's for real yet, but I hope it is. And I know he has a pedigree. And it's not that I don't think Jared Eichhoff has the ability to do this. I worry about the injury that kept him out for so long and that something like that creeping up again. But being able to get him up back into the major league rotation from AAA, and again, like you said, it's just one start from Cole Irvin here. He's going to face some better teams, as we'll get into here in the next few minutes when we talk about the upcoming schedule. But against a Royals team today that likes to put the ball in play, doesn't strike out a whole lot. What I liked from him was hitting the outside corner and then coming in with fastballs. And that's why I said he reminds me a lot of Hyunjin Ryu. I was watching Ryu pitch today against the Nationals, and it looked very similar. I think Ryu throws a little bit harder than Irvin does, but Irvin was just living on the outside part of the plate, and he throws a bunch of different fastballs. I think Major League Baseball, MLB.com's pitch selector or whatever they call that thing where, you know, the pitch tracker was labeling a lot of pitches as sliders when, in fact, I think some of them were different kinds of fastballs. But he stays in the play. He stays in the zone. He doesn't, you know, he just looked like he was doing what he was doing. And, you know, I guess the question is, Liz, you kind of hit it on this a little bit, but Justin, when Vince Velasquez is ready to come back, if Cole Irvin keeps doing this, what do they do with Vince Velasquez?
I mean, I think the way the Phillies have gone about it thus far is maybe not the nicest way, but it's probably the most necessary way for a team to win now mode. I don't know how much of a leap it is to consider how they handled Nick Pivetta's first four starts as the way they're planning on handling the rest of their pitching performances moving forward. But if we were to take that as an example, then I think absolutely Vince Velasquez gets bumped to the bullpen. If we've seen a couple of solid Cole Irvin starts since then, a solid start from a Phillies starter this year is a precious commodity, frankly. And that's why I was kind of addressing this in talking about Irvin's start today. That's why I have to look at each one individually because, yeah, it's fun to project what the future of Cole Irvin could be if he keeps pitching like this. But that just hasn't happened for anyone in the Phillies rotation thus far this year. We've seen, I think, probably like Zach Eflin has been the most stable, solid pitcher for the Phillies this year. But even he has had some games where he's just gotten absolutely blown up. So it's basically like you got to take the good starts as they come and just celebrate that they happened because no one's really been reliable enough to consider a stopper in this rotation. So I think at this point, if you're taking a more fluid approach to keeping this offense or for keeping this rotation in games, then yeah, you got to be a little cruel in your treatment of guys who aren't getting the job done, unfortunately. And I'm sure, you know, Velasquez doesn't want to be in the bullpen, but he also probably doesn't want to be, he probably still wants to be on the roster. So, I don't think that would even be the end of him as a starter this year. It's just sort of like, look, this is where things are right now. We're losing games when you start them. This guy has proven he was able to come up and provide a fresh arm, be a pitcher a lot of the league, none of the league has ever seen before, and showcase a lot of the stuff Philly starts have been missing this year, like command, like you said, like putting the baseball where he wanted to at key moments in order to get outs and being able to use his pitch selection effectively. So yeah, that's something that hasn't happened, certainly not strong as a guarantee for every young Phillies starter this year. So I think if he shows this kind of this level of promise, then you absolutely keep him in the rotation, and you can't be thinking about people's feelings at this point. It's got to be about who's getting the job done.
And in the end, this could just be the excuse the Phillies needed, you know, to try him in the bullpen. We've been looking for a reason forever. This is it. I think it's time to try it. I love him, and you know, you can move him back into the rotation if it looks like he could do it, but if this is the excuse the Phillies finally need to try him in the bullpen and see if that's where he could stick, then so be it.
It's May. The Phillies are going to need more than five guys as in their rotation for the rest of the season. But I think we haven't seen the last of Pivetta, let alone Velasquez making a spot start or a couple of starts because he's looked better. Like that's I think this is going to be a very fluid situation.
No, I agree with that, and you're right. They're not going to have a stable five guys, I don't think, unless unless Cole Irvin starts pitching like Ryu on a night in night out basis. You know, it's kind of funny he has a delivery that looks a lot like Tom Glavine, and what we saw was a guy who had the same kind of stuff as Tom Glavine a little bit there. Not exactly, but, you know, obviously if he had Tom Glavine stuff, he'd be a much better prospect. But, you know, you're right. I think this is the excuse they need to put Velasquez in the bullpen. I know fans have been talking about it. We've been talking about it for years. He started his career in the bullpen with the Houston Astros. I think the bullpen suits him better. We have talked about Velasquez and what goes on inside the ears being a problem for him. And we see when he's doing well, he's working quickly. He's getting the ball and he's listening to his catcher and he's just moving through hitters quickly. When he's struggling, he starts to slow down. He becomes a joyless thing to watch on TV. And it's a problem, I think, for him that he starts getting in his own head. Just let him come out of the bullpen. He loves his fastball. It's all he ever wants to throw. Well, then just let him come out of the bullpen, feature two pitches, a fastball and something else, and let it rip. And I think that's where he's, I think that is where he's going to be better. And I've been, you guys know, I've been kind of tooting Vince Velasquez's horn probably longer than anybody else, wanting to give him as much rope as possible. But we saw how quickly they were to move on from Nick Pivetta in the starting rotation. I have no doubt in my mind that they will keep Vince Velasquez, they'll put him in the bullpen if Cole Irvin continues to pitch well. But are you guys surprised that Pivetta didn't get the call? I know it wasn't exactly his turn in the rotation, but you know, I think they could have figured something out. They had to make a 40-man roster move by getting rid of Aaron Altherr this week in order to put Cole Irvin on the 40-man. I'm kind of surprised they didn't go with one of the 40-man guys and instead decided to go with Irvin.
They must like what they see.
Yeah, and I mean, it hasn't been that long since Pivetta went down, but I do think he made at least one like really dominant start with the Iron Pigs. But yeah, I mean, they just want to get a better glimpse at what kind of depth they're dealing with here. Like Pivetta got his four starts this year, bringing him back up to face major league batters is you know that's still fresh on everyone's mind what happened the last time they gave him that chance. So maybe they just wanted to get a look at what else they had down there, because it's their AAA pitching staff isn't necessarily a gold mine, but you know, maybe you find somebody who can be useful, and it looks like maybe they did.
I think we need to talk about Zach Eflin a little bit here, too. I know we've talked a lot about Eflin so far this season. He's getting better as the season goes along here. His second complete game in his last three starts, this one a shutout on Saturday. Over his last three starts, Eflin has allowed two runs in 25 innings, and he has a 2.47 ERA on the season now. That is 10th lowest in Major League Baseball among qualified starters. Liz, I'll let you start on Zach Eflin. I mean, just an incredible performance, and really a good performance by the starting rotation over the last 15 days. As a whole, the rotation has a 2.36 ERA over the last 15 days, and Zach Eflin right now is pitching better than anybody.
He was so great.
How's he doing it?
He's really focused. I think he's been throwing a lot of first pitch strikes as well, which is something he's talked about as being something that has helped him. I mean, it helps every pitcher to start off with an advantage. So it's just a joy to watch him. It's a joy to watch him because, you know, like a couple of innings in when he's going to be doing well, you sort of, he's like everything Phillies. There's no middle ground. He's either great or it's just immediate terribleness, which I appreciate, to be honest. I'd rather not be kept in the dark. You know, I'd rather, you know, a pitcher not lose it for eight innings in like the sixth. I'd rather know early it's going to be terrible. And, you know, when he's looking good, it's just pleasant to watch because, you know, you can watch him for a few innings and he's going to be good. You know, it's been so long. Like last year, watching Aaron Nola was the first time in such a long time we've been able to watch such dominance regularly. And Zach Eflin is scratching that itch this year.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so wonderful. Good pitching is a joy.
Liz, to your point, Zach Eflin's first pitch strike percentage, 70.2% this year. That is fourth best in Major League Baseball so far.
Hot damn.
Yeah, and Justin, from what I can tell, it's location. You know, when he's got location, when he's locating his fastball, which is 94, 95, 96 miles an hour, that's when he's pitching. Because his secondary stuff doesn't knock your socks off. He doesn't have the secondary stuff that Vince Velasquez does and Nick Pivetta does, and even Jared Eichhoff does with his curveball, you know, but he seems to be really under control with his mechanics and commanding the fastball, putting it where he wants to go. That's what I'm seeing from him that's allowing him to take this next step forward, that's allowing him to get ahead of hitters, and then he's on cruise control.
And again, that's something that a lot of Philly starters have been missing this year. Just it's funny to think back all these pitchers, and you can easily relate them to even just like the type of pitch you're so used to seeing them throw. You know, like you got Jared Eichhoff and his loopy curveball, Vince Velasquez and his high velocity fastball, and Zach Eflin, you're kind of like, What is the thing that he does? What's his X-Men superpower that I'm forgetting? And in this case, it's command, and that's really what's been effective for him and for the Phillies. And yeah, it's a relief, like Liz is saying, to see somebody take the mound who you know is capable of that, because it's something that gets a lot of Philly starters into trouble, including even just like Jake Arrieta, one of the guys who's supposed to be a stabilizing force in that rotation. He hasn't been able to harness the kind of control that Eflin has shown. So yeah, no, I think that's a huge deal. And man, every one of these guys has had a start that made you think, okay, everything might be okay. Eflin's just had a few more of them, and thankfully what somebody has.
Yeah, as up and down as the offense has been over the last couple of weeks, and we've seen Andrew McCutchen get into a big slump, Gene Segura is slumping, Bryce Harper, really the top three hitters in the lineup are slumping right now for the Phillies. Starting rotation, again, that 2.36 ERA over the last 15 days is really helping this team. First place, that's right, in the National League East, and led by the starting rotation, just as we all thought as we were coming into 2019. Up next, we're going to talk about a couple of guys and ask the question, are they having a good season? That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So as we talk a little bit more about the Kansas City series, guys, and the road trip the Phillies just went on, and really as we kind of take a look back over the last few weeks, I want to talk about a couple of guys and talk about whether or not you guys think they're having a good season. And you can define good any way you want to. It's more, I think I'm kind of referring to it as just kind of like a feeling. Like, does it feel like they're having a good season or not? And let's talk about Bryce Harper. Let's talk about the .229 batting average. Obviously, he's just not getting many hits. He did have a big grand slam in the series against the Cardinals that turned a 2-0 lead into a 6-0 lead. That was awesome. He's hitting again .229. But he's got a .376 on base percentage with a .450 slugging percentage. He has 7 home runs. It's not a lot, but not a little either. 51 strikeouts, though, this season. He's on a pace for over 200 strikeouts, something he's never done before. But he has 31 walks, and he's 12th in the National League in on base percentage. A .376 on base percentage with a .229 batting average is really crazy to look at. I mean, that's like that's Adam Dunn type territory right there. So, Justin, let me start with you. Bryce Harper. Given all those numbers and given what he's brought to the team, given maybe how he's lengthened the lineup a little bit, taken pressure off people, however you want to categorize it, is Bryce Harper having a good season?
Well, let me start with this. Before one of the games with the Royals, before one of the games of this series, they were talking about this very thing on NBC Sports. And they were kind of hemming and hawing over Bryce Harper's stats. And somebody was like, not really $330 million numbers. And if that's your sticking point, which is going to be for a lot of people, he's never going to be worth $330 million. Like he's not, there's not going to be an amount of baseball he plays even at an elite level that's going to make somebody go like, I'm glad Bryce Harper got $330 million. Who's already unhappy that he got it. It's just a huge mind-boggling number, but that just can't be your measuring stick for how good he is. That being said, yeah, you want to see a higher number as a batting average than .229. Typically, you just look at that and you think, seems low, even if you're not a believer in that statistic, which a lot of people aren't anymore. That being said, you can't argue with what he's done at just being on the team. Bryce Harper being on the Phillies created a new era of Phillies baseball. And you know, I don't want to overcredit him but there's clearly a ripple effect that happened because he got here. The culture changed, the way the other guys had pressure taken off of them. He got bumped to more effective places in the lineup. People seem to have the jobs they're supposed to have at this point. So as far as like him having a good season, no, I don't think this is really like his best season ever. I don't think it's even yet like an all-star season, really. He gets, I think, a lot of credit just on his name alone. Last year he was an all-star and he didn't have that great of a season. But honestly, he's sort of become a different, maybe not a different type of player, but if you're just looking at his year-to-year stats, last year his walks and strikeouts jumped so much by such a significant margin that you just realize, like, this is a guy the league prepares for. This is somebody that everyone has a way they probably pitch to and defend against. And right now it's just – avoiding him. So he's striking out a lot, like you said, and he's also leading the team in walks. So getting on base is still something he can do, and still something that helps the team. It's obviously not something that you're paying someone $330 million you'd think to do. You could find another player who was just good at getting on base and putting up Bryce Harper's numbers from 2019 without giving him that much money. But since that's going to forever be the barometer with which Bryce Harper is measured, he's never going to seem like he's as good as he's supposed to be. But yeah, that being said, we learned last year what it's like to not have a team absent of even one guy with a high batting average. So even if that statistic isn't something you use to measure a player's worth, we learned last year that even just one 300 hitter in that lineup would have probably made something of a difference with how good they were at getting guys on base and how bad they were at knocking them in. We've seen that happen this year, to the point of calling it a trend as well. So he doesn't need to necessarily be the best player on the team, but that's the expectation in place. So as far as him having a good year or not, I mean, yeah, I'm having a good year watching him. The Phillies are in first place. And like I said, the ripple effect his presence has had has made other guys be better and be the kind of players that the Phillies were missing last year. So yeah, I'm still calling this a good season. Yeah. And it's also very early.
True. Very early. We are still just in what date is it? Early May 12th as we're recording this. Liz, is Bryce Harper having a good season?
I mean, I agree completely with Justin. He kind of said it all. You know, I've enjoyed watching him. He's certainly helped everybody on the team. He's sort of an anchor. You know, it's Philadelphia loves someone that actively chooses them. It's not hard.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, he chose to come here. Like, the Phillies are paying him a lot of money, but he picked here. He decided to come here, and he's spent a lot of time ingratiating himself to the populace. You know, like, you can't say he's not trying. So, you know, I think you have to take into account the whole situation, you know, because Phillies baseball is about what's on the field. But as an organization, it's about taking over the entire city, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I would look at it from an overall perspective at how, you know, great it is to see the Phillies sort of embrace all of this and Bryce Harper embrace the Phillies and the city, and how good it feels for baseball in Philadelphia to be relevant again. So, you know, I don't know if that's a good season, but it's certainly not a bad season. I'd love to see him do better on the field. But, I mean, good Lord, his walks are, like, that's a lot of walks.
It is a lot of walks.
He's having the season of a guy who, he's not putting up superstar numbers. He's having a effective major league season. Yeah. But, you know, when Ryan Howard stopped hitting home runs, people started turning on him. You know, when you stop doing the thing you're expected to do, then it doesn't matter if you're being effective in another way. People are going to be like, you're not doing what I believed you were supposed to do. So yeah, it's, I get it. So like, honestly, yeah, he's probably having a bad season. But it just gets scrutinized and measured. I think it's a little skewed, I would say, the judgment.
I think you're right. The $330 million also skews the judgment. But, you know, the batting average is still the number a lot of people look at immediately. And I have come to value the batting average a little bit more than I think I did in years past. And I understand the value of the batting average. I think it is important. I think having a high batting average is better than having a low batting average. And 229 is really stinking low. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, he's got a Carlos Santana-ish line right now. And I know he's been getting a lot of comps. But the thing with Bryce Harper is he's much more dangerous than Carlos Santana. Pitchers still have to be careful pitching to him. Right now, they're getting Bryce Harper out on fastballs over the plate. I gotta say, I don't think that's a recipe for success long term, pitchers. You know, I think Bryce Harper is going to start catching up to those pitches, and what we've seen from him is that he still has a good idea what the strike zone is. He's not chasing balls out of the strike zone. He's spitting on pitches that aren't strikes and taking his walks and getting on base in front of Rhys Hoskins and JT Realmuto, which is, I think, a pretty good thing to do. 12th in the National League in on-base percentage isn't nothing, especially when you've got a batting average of .229. So,
especially when you've got a lineup full of guys who are fully capable of knocking you in as a base runner.
Exactly. And, you know, he's adding a lot on the bases too, Liz. I mean, base running has been good from him this year too.
And to, to a certain extent, you can't control what the fans do. They're going to do and say what they do. It's a giant blob of groupthink. One person says something and then someone else wonders, well, why am I not thinking that? Why am I thinking this other thing? This first thing is better. So, you know, it's just a giant blob of reaction. So, you know, they're going to think what they think. You know, the Phillies know how valuable he is. And I think as long as we can identify that he is continuing to make a contribution, you know, I think that's important to inject some sanity into the blob.
Right. And I think we are going to see superstar Bryce Harper emerge at some point this season.
I mean, he's going to be here for a decade. Statistically, I feel like it has to happen once.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, Liz, and no doubt about it. So we'll just keep an eye on Bryce Harper. The team's winning despite him having a .229 batting average because he is providing some value in other ways to the team. The other guy, and Justin, you mentioned him just a second ago, is Jake Arrieta. Is he having a quote-unquote good season? Liz, as I've watched him pitch this year, it feels to me like Arrieta has pitched better this year. But the numbers don't really bear that out. He's got a 3.78 ERA, which is good. I think it's fine. I wasn't expecting a whole lot more from Arrieta than a 3.78 ERA. The FIP is 4.76. His strikeout rate's a little higher than last year, 20.2% as opposed to just over 19%. And his walk rate, however, is much higher, 9.1%, which is a little more than a full percentage point over last year's 7.9%. I think this last outing against Kansas City is kind of a good microcosm of really his whole career in Philadelphia thus far. I thought for much of the game he looked really good. I thought his command was good. I thought his ball was moving like crazy. Royals hitters and a lot of those at bats were not squaring him up. They looked silly, but three mistake pitches were all hit for long home runs, two by Alex Gordon, one by Jorge Soler, that went to a whole other Soler system. See what I did there with his name? I'm sorry. I'm really, really sorry, everybody.
Leave those 5-star reviews. Thank you.
Is this why we're recording so late? Because you were
this is why.
Coming up with... Okay.
This is, yeah, I had to work on puns. Yeah. And Liz, I just feel like Arrieta has looked better this year, but I don't think the numbers necessarily say that. But in my mind, I feel like he's had a good year this year. What do you think? Has Jake Arrieta had a good season so far this year?
I don't think so. I'll be honest. I'm like, his numbers are fine for like a, you know, I guess they're okay. They're not excellent. They're not what we want. They're not what we expected him to be at some point. I've never really enjoyed watching him as a Philly. Like, it's weird. Like, he's a fine pitcher. I've never particularly thought he had been very good. And I have no feelings about him continuing to be on the Phillies in the future. I wish he was better. I wish I felt better. You know, like, it's weird. Like, I think he's actually having the same season that he did last year, in that he's good for a little bit and then bad, bad, bad.
Well, the numbers tell a similar story. At a 3.96 ERA last year, it's 3.78 this year, for pretty similar. 4.26 FIP last year, 4.76 FIP right now. But those numbers kind of even out as the year goes along. Pretty similar strikeout per nine. More walks per nine. More home runs per nine. Justin, a career high 1.44 home runs per nine. The last time he had anything that high was when he was with the Orioles in 2011, when it was 1.58. Hitters are batting .251 against him last year. It was .251 this year. It was .251 this year, .250 last year. 1.32 whip this year, 1.29 whip last year. I mean, these numbers are almost identical. And I think we would all look at Jake Arrieta's season last year and say it wasn't a very good season. And yet, I feel like I've seen a better pitcher this year. I guess I'm wrong. Where are you at on Arrieta?
Well, again, we're looking at the numbers and seeing that he's given up, you know, all these home runs. And I mean, obviously he is. But when you hear him talking about this game against Kansas City where he gave up a couple to the Royals, and he said, I made three mistakes and they hit them over the fence. So in his mind, you know, he can be pitching well and make, you know, three mistakes, and the story becomes about how he got absolutely flattened by this terrible AL Central team. And that's fair. because in his mind, it's like, yeah, I nailed all my pitches except the three that lost the game. Like, okay, I get it. But at the same time, you know, you got to make those pitches, man.
Yeah.
Like, you got to make them all the time, obviously, but you really got to make them against this team that is super beatable, the type of team the Phillies have to beat to have a chance against the other teams they might not have such a good chance against.
Right.
So I feel like, no, he's not having a good season, but at the same time, this might be another case of having to redefine expectations about somebody. These statistics might be so similar to last year because this is simply the Jake Arrieta we're dealing with now. It's kind of interesting with him when you start a season and think like, look, leading the rotation is Aaron Nola and Jake Arrieta, and you're like, wow, it's a pretty great 1-2 punch. You lose Aaron Nola the way that the Phillies have seemingly lost a bit of Aaron Nola thus far this year, and then suddenly Jake Arrieta, he doesn't seem so good on his own, and certainly not as the number two starter. Just based on the kind of numbers he's put up since last year, he's not somebody who's going to be able to save you necessarily. He's the guy who also comes through and makes the team better for like, because he's the type of guy you need. The guys who aren't expected definitely to come through, and he's just sort of fading into one of those guys. So yeah, he hasn't shown the bounce back that you're hoping to see from last year, and yeah, I would say that no, he's not having a good year.
And for a guy who runs his mouth a little bit sometimes, where he's critical of teammates,
honestly, I think that's probably the best part about him right now, to be perfectly honest. I think that's
he keeps everyone accountable.
That's his job. And I you know, it's great to see when they cut from somebody doing the Fortnite wave on the bases to somebody in the dugout. Jake Arrieta is always there on the railing waving back. He might not have any idea what the hell he's doing, but he's always doing it back. So, you know, he's like bought into the culture, at least, you know, at least visually. So he's not like, oh, these kids, like, they're so annoying. Yeah. Doing Fortnite. He's doing it, but he's always
engaged.
Yeah. And he's like, but he's doing what Gabe Kapler said he would do. And he's holding people accountable. He's like, look, this happened out there today. I didn't like it. Let's do better. Yeah. It kind of sucks when you throw a crappy game and then try to, you know, shift the blame on everyone else. But you know what? It's a team. And that's sort of what was missing last year, that they, you know, that they considered themselves all this culture stuff, all this clubhouse stuff. Jake Arrieta kind of seems to be unafraid to vocalize his thoughts on that. And I think that is important because that is something this team was missing to an extent last year. So
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with Jake Arrieta voicing his thoughts, but you're right. I think if it's looking a little bit more inward as opposed to outward, and then you go out and you can back it up with pitching, by pitching well.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. He's not pitching well. He's not backing up. Right. He's not backing anything up. And it happened last year when he was critical of the Giants. When he was critical of the team after the Giants game, he went out and then was lousy for a good 2-month stretch. That's you know, if you're going to do that, that's great. But then you can't be bad. You know, you've got to be good. And like I said, I think I have a higher opinion of his actual pitching this year than you guys do. But you know, I'm rethinking it a little bit because the numbers aren't saying so. But yeah,
I don't know if you can trust me. I mean, I always feel like he pitches worse than his numbers actually show. When I watch him, I always feel like he's doing so much worse than he actually is. I don't know why. He's a perfectly fine pitcher.
I mean, the reason everyone is high on Jake Arrieta, or was high on Jake Arrieta, was because of 2015. When he put up numbers he's not even come close to for the remainder of his career. He hasn't had an ERA under 3 since 2015. Let alone under 2, like he threw that year when he led the league in starts and complete games and shutouts. I mean, that's just a Jake Arrieta that I don't think exists on this planet anymore. So
yeah,
that's what I mean by redefining expectations.
True. No, that's a fair point. I think you're right. We need to do that with Arrieta, is just kind of reposition our minds and not think of him as a number two starter anymore, because he's not. That's not the guy he is. One other thing before we jump off the Royals series, I really kind of was watching this series and falling in love with the Royals home uniforms. I haven't seen the Royals play all that much, but I remember the Royals are one of the first teams I watched when I was little, because the first World Series I ever watched was the 85 World Series with the Royals and the Cardinals. And it was a great World Series. It was the very first one I ever watched when I was like 9 years old, 10 years old, whenever it was. I was nine when that World Series happened. And I love the Royals home uniforms. The white with the royal blue lettering, it's really classic. I think the KC on the cap looks really good. They featured some uniforms this week that had some gold lettering on it, in addition to like some of the blue. I think the Royals uniforms may be the most underrated uniforms in Major League Baseball, because they look exactly like the Dodgers uniforms, only, you know, they say Royals across the front. And I like the crown. I like the name. I think it's just a really cool logo, cool uniforms that they have. Am I crazy? Where do you guys fall on the Royals uniforms, and what uniform in Major League Baseball do you think is really underrated? Liz, let me start with you.
I actually think I like the White Sox a little bit. I don't know why. Like, they're not that much different than any other uniform, but I kind of like sort of the color scheme. I like the touches they put on the socks. I really love the way the S and the socks looks, and how the X has little feet. I'm also swayed by their absolutely incredible vintage uniforms with the,
oh, those are great,
the bar across the center. Yep. And like that, like, people don't give that uniform enough love, because it's so gorgeous.
Agreed.
Like, it's really great and minimalist, the way the socks, like, it's like NASA age amazing. I really, it's incredible NASA realness all over the place. I really like, I think their whole uniform suite, and even their history, is really underrated.
No, that's right. They've been around forever. They've had a ton of different uniforms. When their black and white Sox uniforms came out, I think it was like in 93 or 92 or whatever, at the height of like the Frank Thomas era, maybe it was like 90, whatever. They were hugely popular. Like, everybody, even if you weren't a White Sox fan, everybody was wearing Sox hats and getting like White Sox uniforms and stuff, because I think at the time, like, the black and white was really, really popular. And that was like a big deal. The White Sox uniforms, that's their main uniform now, was hugely popular when they replaced the old ones. And I always liked it too. I thought the caps and the logos and the white pinstripe jerseys looked really good.
I'm literally on the White Sox shop right now looking to see if I could buy one of those Sox shirts with the little hitting man.
Yeah. Those are good. There's a good, that's
like,
a good
why
selection.
Why don't I own one already? I really should. I'm about to own one.
Not many people own White Sox stuff who are outside of Chicago, and really inside of Chicago all that much either. Justin, how about you? Any underrated uniforms for you?
Man, I am not a baseball uniform traditionalist. I think old time uniforms, I know a lot of baseball fans and writers we know just go absolutely gaga over this stuff, and I think that they are boring and suck. And I mean, the Reds have a gallery of throwback uniforms this season, and one of them looks like a maintenance man uniform. Like, they're
so great. So, God, there's an image of Joey Votto just like in that old timey uniform with like the puffy pants and the shirt, and he was had the bat on his shoulder. I'm just like, God, he looks like he's directly from like 1910.
He looks like he took money.
Instagram filter over.
Who cares?
He looks like he took money from a bookie to throw a World Series. He absolutely does.
It's
who
awesome.
Cares? Give me colors. Give me waves and waves of colors generated by the region your team plays in. That's why I love a bunch of these. I love how the Mariners look like they're from the Northwest. I love how the Diamondbacks look like their uniforms are like burned off by the sun. I love how
from a tacky Phoenix. Yeah. From a tacky Phoenix.
Yeah, I love that. That's that they reflect the places that they are from. I that's why I think, and everything about this team is underrated and deserves to be. But that's why, instead of going with one of those teams, I'm going with the. Oh, also, I have to mention the Rockies. The way the purple and their uniforms reflect the Rocky Mountains and everything, like, that's awesome. But that's why I have to say the Marlins, even though they have new uniforms this year and everyone hates them and blah blah blah, they have an alternate uniform, and I don't even really mind when the Rays wear this version either. But it seems to be a Florida thing of like doing soft pastel colors are kind of like their reflection of Florida, these in-between shades, not like primary colors. I mean,
it's
God only knows there's plenty of blue teams, there's plenty of red teams, like it's a boring, we don't need that anymore. We don't need teams picking one color and trying to make it there. Find a new color, and the Marlins have done that this year with one of their home alternates. Now, keep in mind, I'm kind of colorblind and largely color ignorant, so I can't even really describe this color properly, but I do think it's like a soft light blue. And the Rays, I think, wear a version of this too, and they also have a darker blue that I think is all right. But the Marlins, they have this blue as one of their alternates, and then they just have that like neon sign of a logo and script this year that's like kind of pink and looks like it's outside of a nightclub in Miami. And I think that's a new version of this regional representation through colors in a team's uniform. And you know, the Marlins don't have a lot right now. And people outside of Miami, you know, we have our perceptions of Miami, and it sort of captures that while also making people like proud of where they're from. The Phillies don't do that. If Philadelphia did sports uniforms right, everybody would have blue and yellow uniforms because that's what's on the city flag, the way that all the uniforms in Pittsburgh are the same colors. Like, you're representing the city you're from. That would be cool. But, you know, we're obviously past that at this point. But that's kind of where I'm at. I think the Marlins have a great underrated alternate uniform they wear that really reflects Miami.
Yeah, and I'll just put a button on this by saying I thought that one of the uniforms the Marlins were wearing, and I don't know if it's the one you're talking about, but it was like a black top with the gray Matte. I don't know how you say that. Matte. I'm not a color guy either. But
that's the new dumb thing on this pod that usurps me mispronouncing amalgam as the dumb brain fart on this podcast.
No, it doesn't. It's not true. Anyway, they had that like a grayish on the black that I thought looked pretty cool. But they also the teal uniforms. The Marlins original teal uniforms that they still wear occasionally.
Let me try to show you what I'm talking about. This is probably closer to that. I think the teal. I am a sucker. Yeah, I'm a sucker for Carolina blue. So I think that's probably why I lean towards this.
Okay.
The Rays have some really good, like, fake throwback uniforms that are you have to look.
Yeah,
them
the
up.
Colors. Like the real Devil Rays. Yeah.
Like today, I think today the Rays wore their actual throwbacks, their Devil Rays, which are again like lots of soft colors. Like it's really '90s and great, but like their fake throwbacks. They've got like a flower inside the A with like this incredibly 70s font. It's absolutely gorgeous. I would own one.
That was like, some designer's like dream project to be able to do that for a big league team. That was so cool. I think, was it the Mariners and somebody did like Future Night and they wore futuristic uniforms?
Yes. Oh, there needs to be more of that in Major League Baseball. Like, why? Let's have fun with uniforms. Like, why don't they? It's a great source of income. They want to make more money off us. Make incredibly weird jerseys.
They have to know how much money they would make by doing something like, I saw Craig Goldstein saying, seeing MLB versions of the NBA City jerseys would be exactly what I'm talking about. And I would spend money on that. I know a ton of people would.
I would too.
Yeah, the Toronto Raptors, We the North shirts and stuff like that. I thought those were really cool too. Those are fantastic. I
love the Portland Rip City jerseys. Like that's awesome.
Those are good.
And I originally hated the Sixers city uniforms, but I fell in love with them. The gray with the white
stars.
Yeah,
those are good too. Oh, those are good too.
I really love them. The Sixers have such great uniforms. They have embraced their 70s and just have not looked back. It's so great.
I think
we're
going to have to start a new podcast called Uni Talk, where we can just talk about sports uniforms all the time, because we could go on with this for forever. But let's take our last quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the Phillies second base situation and take a look at the rough upcoming next 20 games that the Phillies are about to embark on. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So real quick, guys, Scott Kingery is going to begin a minor league rehab assignment on Monday night at Low A Lakewood. He's been out since April 20th, of course, with a right hamstring strain. And I guess the question is, where is he going to play? How much is he going to play? We have to remember that he was hitting pretty well when he hit the disabled list. Really unfortunate timing for Kingery that he hit the DL when he did, because his bat had finally gotten hot after a brutal season last year. Cesar Hernandez has been one of the team's better hitters as of late, Justin. He's got that batting average around 300 now, but he's had some stretches where he was unproductive, made some bad plays on defense, made some bad plays on the base paths, and we kind of know that's Cesar's MO. I mean, he's a guy with some positives, but also a guy with some negatives. And, you know, what do you think the Phillies are going to do with Scott Kingery when he's ready to come back? Is Cesar still going to be the starter most of the time, do you think?
No, I think they got to play him. I think they saw too much of a good thing from him and lost it through no one's fault. So I feel like you got to get him in there to get even just a longer look at to see if what he was doing was for real. Like you said, this is Cesar Hernandez's MO, And we can say that because you know Cesar by now. You know what you have. And we're learning something new potentially about Scott Kingery, and something that could have he might wind up having a higher ceiling than Cesar. So I feel like, yeah, you gotta this gave Cesar a chance to start pretty significantly and get a long look at what the 2019 version of him looks like. And guess what? It's largely the same Cesar Hernandez. He's actually making a few more mistakes than he did when he was at his best this year, or last year and the year before. So I think the Phillies have a good idea of who they have in Cesar. And I know they like him and we like him. He's not a bad player, but like you said, he's been struggling, and you know what to expect from him. And it's not always the kind of production that you might be getting out of Kingery. So, I mean, yeah, even just out of curiosity, I think you got to get Scott Kingery back in there as soon as he becomes available.
Liz, what do you think? Do you think, I would love to see it, but I'm not convinced that it's going to happen. What do you think?
I'm kind of with you. I really want them to play them. I think they need to play them. I think that they are afraid. I think it's been quite a long layoff for him. And I would love to see him come back and hit. They have to give him chances. They absolutely can't afford to just have him sit. Like, I think I saw today that they're going to have him play like four different positions in the minors. And I screamed out loud in my home. Just spontaneously, because like that's screw him up. Like, that's not. No, but like they're having him do it in the minors because Cesar has finally started hitting, so they don't want to move him. That's what happened last year, and it's really, they can't do it anymore. It's just a waste. It's a waste of Scott Kingery, and if they do it again, it's criminal. Pick one. You have to pick one. Because Scott Kingery is not a utility man. He can sort of play shortstop. He's there. He's competent. I don't think that's enough. He deserves playing time at his primary position. If the Phillies can't give it to him, then send him somewhere that he can get it.
I'm with you guys. I'm ready to see Scott Kingery. Not only that, we talked about it last week, Liz, the fact that the Phillies don't really have anybody on defense that is a spectacular defender or a well above average defensive player. Scott Kingery is at second base. And, you know, so I think that is one area, even at second base, where he may not give you the batting average of Cesar Hernandez right away. He might. We'll see. He was hitting really well before he went on the IL. But I think it's time for Scott Kingery. I know why the reasons not to is because Scott Kingery can, as a utility guy, can play more positions, quote unquote, than Cesar Hernandez can. Hernandez is just locked in at second base, but you can't DFA Cesar Hernandez, but they got to find a trade partner and they have to move on. I think they got to get Scott Kingery in the lineup every day. So we'll see what they do. It looks like Kingery is going to need a few days on a minor league rehab assignment. And hopefully when he comes back hitting well. All right, guys, over the next 20 games, the Phillies are going to be playing these teams, the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Rockies, the Cardinals, and the Brewers twice.
This
is a rough patch coming up, it looks like it could be.
Oh, no.
I know. This is going to be a test. This is going to be a real good test for this starting rotation that's been pitching so well and for a lineup that has put runs on the board. They may not have a bunch of guys in there who are all hitting great right now, but the Phillies offense has certainly not been a problem this year. I don't really know where to go with this other than just to say, how you feeling about the next 20 games, Justin?
So good. So effing good. Oh, my God.
How many do they win? How many of the next 20 games do they win, do you think?
All right, look, I actually, you know, I did manage to roll this around in my head a little bit. And, well, the terrifying part about the Brewers is that Ryan Braun is on them. And that's, you know, that's not as alarming a sentence as it was a couple of years ago. It should be in Citizens Bank Park. I don't know if you saw the other day, but he got booed into homering, I think, three times in a game again or something.
It only makes him stronger. When will people learn?
Stop booing Ryan Braun.
He's a douche, and booing him makes him stronger.
Now,
Stop it.
I will say that I think he had a hamstring issue, so he might be sitting, which would be just terrific. That would be such welcome news. And the Brewers themselves, I mean, it's not a team you want to face. They did win seven in a row, I think, against NL East teams, and Jesus Aguilar sucks. He is real bad. That being said, it's just not a team. No, you just certainly don't look forward to facing them. And then who's next? The Rockies. Their pitching has been bad. Kyle Freeland hasn't looked good. Ian Desmond.
Yeah, they're not doing as well as I think we all expected.
They were
them
so
to do.
Up and down. They lost 10 of 11 and then won 12 of 14. And I think the best news for the Rockies opponents is that Daniel Murphy has been bad. He was one of their big acquisitions, and he's been bad.
That
makes me happy. Rizzo didn't for the Cubs. Anthony Rizzo had he sat for something or got pulled for something, which would be working in the Phillies' favor. But the Cubs had 3 walk-offs in a week.
they're on a roll. They're trending up.
Yeah, I think at this point the Cubs are the team I'm least looking forward to facing because they look like they're just kind of a buzzsaw. They're getting everything. Wilson Contreras is they needed him to be exactly what he's being. Probably he's overcoming expectations for himself this year, and he's sort of running that offense.
Yeah, and Javi Baez is having a great season for Chicago again as well. I never thought Javi Baez would be as good as he has been, given all of his strikeout problems early in his career, but he has been amazing. And
I would give up some serious prospects for
no
him.
Doubt about it.
I would
no
do
doubt
it.
About it.
Oh God!
Well, the Dodgers.
I wouldn't even think twice.
And the Dodgers are in the mix here too, and the Dodgers have. I watched a few games this weekend of the Nationals against the Dodgers, and let me just. Cody Bellinger and Jock Peterson and Max Muncy and Justin Turner at the top of that lineup, they just chew. You talk about the Phillies hitters chewing through pitchers. It's unbelievable what these guys are doing right now at the top of the lineup. It's ridiculous. And so that the Dodgers also make me a little bit. You talk about the Cubs being a buzzsaw. Right now, the Dodgers lineup is a buzzsaw.
I was going to say that. Yeah, they are the most consistently good team in the National League this year. I was looking through it and found that a lot of these teams, like the Rockies and Cardinals, have really fluctuated cartoonishly. But the Dodgers have pretty much just had one bad patch in early April. And ever since then, it's like you said, it's just the Cody Bellinger show co-starring Justin Turner. Jock Peterson has more home runs than singles. Did you see that the other day?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
What a weirdo.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Justin, I saw the link you just sent about the Marlins uniform. Yeah, it's gorgeous. And it is more like a teal. It's very close to teal, but not quite. It's a little darker than teal. It's like a sky blue almost is what it looks like to me.
I've been saying I'm colorblind for years, but I've been outed as just color stupid in the past couple of years.
No, I think sky blue. I think it's sky blue, and it looks really good on the black hat with the sky blue M outlined on the black hat. That's a really – you're right. That's a great-looking uniform, highly underrated. I'll put this up on my Twitter feed at John Stolness. You can check out what it is we're talking about.
Justin wins the podcast again. Yes.
Yay for Justin for winning the podcast. So, Justin, since you won the podcast, if you have any final words, you get to say them first, my friend.
I would just like to say that I don't know if anybody watched Saturday Night Live this weekend, but they made a joke about Tony Soprano curb stomping the Philly fanatic. So that's something you got to watch out for.
Liz, how about you? Any final thoughts?
I am afraid of the next 20
minutes. I think that Dodgers series could be a lot of fun based on what you said, John. Let's assume the Phillies offense writes itself in those top 4 spots alone. Just seeing those 2 batting orders go at it, that would be a lot of fun. This actually makes me kind of look forward to it.
Yeah. I'm only afraid because the Phillies are, I mean, despite their offense being fine, today and yesterday, they have some guys slumping, and it would be great to see them break out of that slump and just play golf with an offense, just hit them into a lake somewhere and let them drown. I want to see it. So I'm afraid, but of course, incredibly
that story
excited.
Had a dark ending.
Let's see some good baseball.
Well,
did you expect to have a better ending?
That took a left turn.
Yes, it did.
It did not. It was going exactly where you thought it was going.
Well, the Phillies opened things up on Monday night against the Milwaukee Brewers at Citizens Bank Park. It's going to be a 4-game series against the Brewers, who I know the Brewers are a really good baseball team. 24-18. They've got one more win than the Phillies and 2 extra losses. So the Phillies have a slightly better winning percentage than Milwaukee, but 2 of the best teams in the National League for 4 games in Philadelphia this week. Hopefully, we'll see fans out at the ballpark selling out Citizens Bank Park, but Should be a great week of baseball and a really tough stretch. Good measuring stick, litmus test, whatever you want to say about it for the Phillies coming up here over the next 20 days. That will do it for episode number 285 of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin Clue and Liz Rozier for being my podcast pals here on Sunday night. As always, you can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue and Liz Rozier at Liz Rozier. And again, check out our Patreon. It's at patreon.com/hittinseason and see all the extra bonus content we have there. Just hop on that $5 a month tier to do that and you'll get all the good stuff. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.